Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Theme music. I'm thinking of
insert theme music.
As much as I like the theme music, I may just start inserting random copyrighted music as a way of testing when we've really reached a height of attention.
How do we know that, you know, music moguls are listening?
That's the thing, right?
Yeah, you know, if Quincy Jones writes a Dear Faggot email and tells me to fuck off playing this stuff in the intro, I'll be like, you should really have addressed that to Hey Tranny. She's the one in charge of this show. I just have personality.
I'm the one who actually mixes it and make these legal decisions. Also, it's under my name.
I'm just here to be sassy and provide the... I was going to say champagne, but not yet.
Next episode.
Yeah. The bubbly episode.
I'm not cutting any of this out.
Good. Never cut it out.
Editing. Editing is for people with a plan.
Well, the subtitle to Please Shut Up should definitely be never edited out.
Ooh.
Yeah
that'd be... It's a hip-hop thing.
I should definitely know this, then.
And then it came back around to Andy Samberg doing a film that is called, like, Never Stop, Never Stopping. And it's, like, a biopic of essentially himself if he was Justin Bieber. And it's amazing. And it's called Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like Andy Samberg.
Not just because
of the nose, but I do... A good nose is a good thing. It'll just set off the whole face. And Andy Samberg, he gives good nose.
Andy Samberg gives good nose. I liked him on SNL, but I was worried that he was going to become, like, one of their... You know, people, when they get out of SNL, either become... really entertaining and great, like, you know, Will Ferrell or whatnot, or just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is terrible. I can't even think of his name right now, but the guy who did Joe Dirt.
David Spade.
Oh, you made me
I
think
did,
of his
David
name.
Spade. I'm going to make you think about a lot about David Spade. What was that show he was on? It was a sitcom with what's her name from Hot in Cleveland, Wendy Malick. I'm betting 1,000 on Wendy Malick.
I know, I can picture
she was like the hot one. And 8 billion bonus points, Laura San Giacomo from Stephen King's The Stand.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, she was
in
the show too.
How can you pull out memories of Stephen King's The Stand? That very
it remains so unsuccessful
it.
In actual day-to-day
that
knowledge.
Very specific version of it too. Oh my God.
Because this was a terrible sitcom that I actually remember watching and enjoying back in the land before time, before the internet, when television was all terrible, but you just didn't know any better. And also, it was the background show that the family ended up watching when they were depressed on Six Feet Under.
Oh. Curious.
It's it was kind of a great tie-in. It's like you would only watch this show when you had experienced great loss and occasional self-loathing.
I never watched 6 Feet Under because the pitch for it. All right, like I, the age that I was and stuff. The pitch of like, well, it's a drama about a family of undertakers, and it's just like, I am not here for any of this.
No. Oh, this, that was. I'm sorry. That was such the wrong call. So the wrong call. Okay. 6 Feet Under is my favorite television show of all time.
Yeah.
Like, there's just absolute bar none still.
Okay.
Second, BoJack Horseman, I think. But digressing.
Curious.
No, it's fantastic. I love dark humor.
Yeah.
Brent tells me all the time that I paint with dark colors when I'm being funny. I take that as a great compliment. No, I've been around funeral homes a strange amount.
Okay.
My grandmother was a housekeeper in a funeral home. And she gave us all a tour when I was probably 8.
Yeah.
And we went down into the basement, and there was, like, this, to my eyes at that age, a bed. But it was kind of, like, leaned back towards where, like, the pillow should be, and there was a toilet at the end. And I was like, what is that? And my grandmother, you know, very respectful of not wanting to traumatize a young child, said, that's where they cut the head open and drain out the blood. And I love telling this story. I think it's hysterical.
Oh my.
So 6 Feet Under really appealed to me. Like, a dark comedy with an extremely relatable gay character set in a funeral home. Like, I'm down. I'm down for 5 fantastic seasons and the best, the only on that level by far series finale that I've ever seen, as far as I'm concerned.
Interesting. I didn't even know it was a dark comedy, so this is news.
Oh, it's hysterical. It's hysterical. There's tons of, like, weird magical realism where they just, like, burst into Broadway numbers in the middle of an awkward encounter, and then it'll just cut back to, like, No, it's great. The start of every episode, somebody dies.
Okay.
Beginning next week, the start of every episode of The Industry is Doomed, somebody dies.
Oh, no, this is absolutely an episode of Shut Up right now. we'll record Industry later, I'm pretty damn sure, but when we start talking about television.
Okay, but I'm fine with preempting the regular show to get to the irregular show because
yeah.
No, it's so good. So the beginning of every episode, it starts with a cold open where somebody dies, and that person who dies is the vast majority of the time, barring odd circumstances, the body at the Fisher family funeral home for that episode.
Which makes sense. It's almost like the celebrity murderer of the week.
Exactly. So, like, when a rare show begins with the main family, with the Fisher family.
Yeah.
You know, that's who you tune in to watch, is the Fishers. So when a show begins with them, for a little bit, your brain is just like, all right, 6 Feet Under. And then it slowly dawns on you, the moment of horror, that somebody always dies in the cold open, This is... like, the first time in, like, maybe a season and a half or something, where it hasn't opened with strangers.
Oh,
and it's
no.
Just like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And so, you know, and I don't want to spoiler alert anything, so the one instance I'm thinking of where it's early on is, like, an old man drives up to the funeral home in his, like, gorgeous, like, old 50s car, I believe, and he puts an envelope on the dashboard, and he, like, basically falls asleep against his steering wheel and just... quietly, gently passes away. And what he put on his steering wheel was his pre-need agreement, they call it, where it's like all the details prepaid of his funeral. He's just sort of like, oh, today feels like the day. I better drive myself down to the local funeral home and make sure everything's prepared. And, yeah. The only, of course, fabricated detail aside from, I'm sure this has probably happened somewhere, but they don't portray on film, thankfully, the effects of this happening in Los Angeles, presumably.
Ew.
Like, yeah. And the windows are down as well, so, you know. Okay, like, it's a dry heat, maybe. Like, maybe that helps. Like,
It'll help.
It's not Halifax in
eventually.
Summer, where, like, the living start to putrefy by, like, late July.
Jesus Christ.
But, yeah, no, you absolutely need to watch this. It's...
I really should check that out. It's one of those things of, to get me into something that I see as being a drama, I have to put physical effort into it. I am just terrible at stuff on TV that is to be taken seriously. Show me a movie, I'm great. Sit me down and say, here's 18 hours of a very serious thing, and if it's not a documentary, I'm going to be like,
You and I are complete opposites. When I sit down to watch a movie, yeah. I kind of hope for disposable entertainment. Because if there's characters I'm going to get engaged with, I'm just like, I actually, like, you got me invested in your storyline here, and now you're done in, like, an hour and 45 minutes. Like, what the fuck? Whereas, no, I want to, suspension of disbelief is a wonderful thing. I want to just relax and immerse myself in the world of these bizarre people. And if they're unappealing, then I'll tune out after an episode. I'm like, well, that's not worth my time. Goodbye.
See, and that's why, like, I want to immerse myself, but I want to immerse myself in bonkers. And that's what, like,
is.
You know, problem of, like, you know, watching anything, even, like House of Cards or something, is it? It's not bonkers enough. I'm bored.
Oh, no, this is not that tone at all. No, like, there's a human foot left in a high school locker at one point. What else happens? There's, I love it, the dad. He dies in the first episode.
Cool.
He's the body in the cold open.
Okay.
Yeah. And, but he comes back, like, all the time.
But, like just as, like, a ghost?
As a ghost, as a, not, but memory. Not as, like, you know, it's not, it's never clarified.
It's not literally.
Which I love, because
needs.
It's not, like, nobody needs to know what, and it's, like, you don't, the last thing you need is, like, some obnoxious cable television, like, spectroanalysis garbage. Like, no. No, so it's always left to the viewer's imagination, but, like, it's often very clear that it's their own psychological way of moving through something, because sometimes when one of the characters is at their worst, like, he or the other dead people that show up routinely can be very mean, and it's, you know, it's often ends up for their benefit in terms of, like, working through something, but he's one of the most hilarious characters on the show. He's fucking screaming. He's great, and he's back fairly regularly.
I'll obviously have to check it out now. Especially since I have nothing else at the moment to watch. I've gone through everything. Well, except for Kim's Convenience, I'm going to
Kim's Convenience
sit down and watch that.
Are you? Do you know who I mean by Lauren Ambrose?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you know her from? Cause
that's it actually.
Okay,
like,
she was in. She was in Torchwood, which
I really should actually know better, because I've watched every goddamn episode. I was there for Torchwood.
Torchwood is only watchable
in the early
first
days.
Three seasons, though.
Oh, I know. Oh, well, the first three seasons, so long as, I can't remember, did that include the 3, 4, 5? Or 5, 4, 5, 6? Whatever. That was a great series. That's the one where, aliens come down, obviously, because it's...
That was,
and they take the kids.
Yes, that was I think that was season 3.
Okay, yeah. I can't... The American
Yes, that was season 3. The American... Oh. That was probably... okay, so yeah, she was in that. But she's also in... Psycho Beach Party? Have you never seen Psycho Beach Party?
I've heard of, and I've heard that it's amazing.
Who is the drag queen that's in that? Well, I don't even want to say drag queen. That feels like pigeonholing. Like, this is, like, I believe the movie's director or writer or both, who also shows up playing, like, a hard-nosed lady cop, but, like, is very clearly, like, a man in, like, portraying a woman.
Yeah.
Like, but, like,
we've had the internet.
Having lots of spoof fun about it and being super camp, but, like, never acknowledging it. It's great. But, yeah, Lauren Ambrose is in this, and the movie has terrible reviews. And it's just one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen. It's bananas. You want bananas, watch that movie. Psycho Beach Party. It's perfectly named, too.
I've completely screwed up my phone. Here we go.
Yeah, I can't remember. This part of my edit, because it's just us Googling.
Oh, God, no. You have to... Robert Lee King.
This part is brought to you by Google.
So, based on Charles Bush's hilarious long-running stage play, Psycho Beach Party is a wickedly fun satire of Hollywood film genre.
It has a rating of 53% approval on whatever the hell rating system that was. Oh, Rotten Tomato. No, it's great. Lauren Ambrose, hilarious.
I get the feeling that this is definitely a smarter thing than it. And a lot of people assume.
Whoa. Listeners, do yourself a non-favor and Google Nicholas Brandon, who was also in it.
Holy shit. He does not look good.
Things have gone slightly Nick Nolte for Nick Brandon.
Slightly Nick Nolte.
You don't want anyone with Nick Nolte in it, but.
Good lord, that man has fallen apart. Both of them.
So what's the premise of this show for our listeners and those of us who suddenly became aware we were recording it?
So the entire purpose of Would You Please Shut Up is talking about pop culture. If I feel like, or you feel like doing a movie review at some point, review away. If suddenly you have an essay on pop culture, essay away. If you just want to be like...
essay away.
If you just want to be like, you know, I really like watching The Venture Brothers, and yap for however long that goes, ta-da.
We'll have to bring in a guest star for that.
Oh, God, yes.
Venture Brothers, oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, both of us could probably go for days.
I'm glad you're more of a, from what I'm gathering, movie enthusiast than TV enthusiast, though, because I am an embarrassingly huge fan of a lot of television. Like, a lot of well-done television. I don't watch crap, but, like, I watch probably too much TV, but it's some impressive stuff, and I'm guilty for a rewatch. At the 6 Feet Under, I have rewatched 30 times.
Whereas I get home and I usually throw either a Netflix or a movie I've downloaded on, or I just go to my YouTube feed and hit play for the day. And, like, I don't watch network television unless it's a very specific thing.
Mm.
You got Star Trek back on? I'll watch that.
I just found out, because I don't ever look things up until suddenly I become aware of them and get very excited about it.
Yeah.
CBC TV is all free on demand now.
Really?
Like, on the old interwebs. Yeah.
It makes sense. They're supposed to be free everywhere.
I know. I used to get so annoyed I'd try to look something up, and just not a thing. Come on. Schitt's Creek.
Oh.
So are you watching Schitt's Creek?
Yes. I have not seen the most recent episode.
Like, the best gay storyline going on television.
It's such an incredible performance.
So adorable.
Yeah.
So well done. Dan Levy is immaculately dressed.
Yeah.
As David. Like, I'm jealous. Absolutely.
Everything about the character is great.
Well.
I love that, you know, like, in any other show, this would be one or two episodes. Especially, like, you know, setting up the apothecary and all that. One or two episodes, failure.
And then it would just go away. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No. They commit to things.
They really do. They stick to this thing. Like, I didn't think it would last. I didn't think that show would last a season when I heard the premise. But then you go and watch it, and you're like, oh my god, the Levies are amazing.
That's the thing. I was initially, like, you know, excited about the Levies. I didn't know Dan Levy at the time. I didn't realize that I was supposed to be married to him, nor did he, apparently, or his wife. But Eugene Levy, you know, I'm, of course, a huge fan. Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, Catherine O'Hara, forever.
Yeah, exactly. Just, David.
David.
All the time in this house. Just,
David.
We're constantly being Moira Rose. It's so much fun.
Everything.
We're constantly being Moira Rose, and oh my god, if this is the pop culture show, we're constantly saying, Miss Vanjie. Miss Vanjie. Have you heard of this? Are you aware of this at all? Are you aware of Vanessa Vanjie Matteo?
I think that's, yeah.
Holy fuck. So, she got the boot on week one of season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
And she kind of talks like, I want to say Joe Pesci, but she's like this compact little Hispanic drag queen, and is just fucking a scream in all of the little cutaway, like, talkover scenes. It's just, you're just so in love with her by the end of episode one, and at the same time, so entertained that anyone sounds like this.
Yeah, it's just like, you actually do sound,
I
never would have pegged it until you said Joe Pesci.
And,
like,
and then she gets the boot, and is as horrified as the viewing audience, obviously. So all she does is, as she's leaving, they always get, like, if anyone out there has never seen the show, the drag queen who loses the lip sync for your life, a lip sync contest against, weekly contest against another bottom position on this competition show, drag queen, they get a hot minute to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Like, they get a cutaway line as they walk off stage. And so she just walks backwards off stage saying, Miss Vanjie, Miss Vanjie, Miss
brilliant
Vanjie, like, three times in the most I like to think unintentionally despondent voice. And, oh my god, I watched it with my husband, and we're just cackling, just dying, and the entire next week. Miss Vanjie, just in the middle of a random conversation. Didn't even really think to, like, go outside of our little suburban bubble and see if anyone else had had this response to it. Finally go online and realize not just even RuPaul's Drag Race watchers have embraced this, like, an entirely new segment of humanity has become aware of the show, I like to think, because of this Miss Vanjie thing. It's unbelievable. RuPaul was almost reduced to tears on the judging panel. You see in episode 2. Episode 2 starts with everyone commenting on this exit line, and then Ru saying to another judge, Michelle Visage, something to the effect of, what was the name? I didn't catch it. And then getting in response, Miss Vanjie, to the point that she, is almost like pissing her pants. Just perfect. I thought it was the most insane thing.
Yeah.
Watching it on the night it aired. I thought it was just, what the fuck has this person done? What? Miss Vanjie? Like, just, and then it was just, if you're going to make something an earworm for the nation, for many nations apparently, something that will not quit, just by saying it 3 times, make it your fucking name.
Yeah.
What a branding effort. What a marketing genius. Just
set for life.
Miss
Vanjie.
Sure, everyone thinks she's
right.
A ghost, but fuck, just, it sticks, it sticks, it stays forever. I don't even remember how we got to this, but that is the pop culture moment of, like, the month of the, of longer, possibly a year. God only knows.
We should have that for every episode. The pop culture moment of the thing.
Pop culture moment of the, oh my brain! It's
oh
perfect.
My god!
Yeah. Miss Vanjie, Miss Vanjie, Miss Vanjie.
Miss Vanjie.
It, I feel like, did we not talk about that last week? Because we kept repeating somebody's name 3 times. How did we not repeat Miss Vanjie?
I think that was Whitman.
It wasn't.
We were complaining about,
like, I feel like there's someone scarier than Whitman.
Other stuff.
We'll have to go back and check. But that was another show.
It was a 2-hour episode.
Not just another episode
of
it, but an entirely different podcast, apparently.
Yeah. So you're now on 2 podcasts. Congratulations.
Yay!
Sorry, I'm
looking
over it.
At such breakneck speed.
There's a copy of Watchmen, and I just, like, I'm trying not to bring it up, because that would
this
be...
This is the pop culture show.
Bring
it up.
Would be an 8-hour single
bring it up.
Episode.
Bring it up. Okay, I like to write.
Yeah.
You like to write. We both appreciate written things. Most of that is drawings, and yet it is still probably one of my favorite, I would say, novels of all time.
Yeah, it is brilliant. It
it's
cannot
so,
be recreated.
The depth is
in
incredible.
Film.
It's so
yeah.
layered. It's so layered. Of course it was doomed to fail on film. I didn't realize it was doomed to fail as hugely my eyes as it did.
Zack Snyder is the consummate first-year film school student. He always picks the, like, nothing he does is wrong. Everything he does is so fucking obvious. Oh, you're going to play that specific song at that exact moment? Yes, that is what you're trying to get people to think of. But you don't have to be so goddamn clueless as to literally do it.
Malin Ackerman
hmm.
is not a wooden actress.
No. No one, no one in that is a wooden actor or actress or anything.
Nope, outside of that film.
Yeah.
Oh my god, everyone is a tree.
Yeah.
They're so wooden.
Yeah.
It's, oh, she's so bad. Everyone's terrible. And it's not their fault. It's just, it's a horrible movie.
It really, and like when you get...
It's like watching Natalie Portman struggle through The Phantom Menace. You're like, oh, you're not having fun either.
You're capable.
This is terrible.
And this is sad.
Oh, this is so bad. This is...
Or like watching, it's like watching Hayden Christensen in Life as a House and being like, oh, that's why you were hired. Because you were amazing when you're working with, you know, Kevin Klein.
It's hard to believe that given the right stuff, Hayden Christensen isn't terrible. And they say it's hard to believe because I've seen the... prequels or the whatever you want
yeah.
to call them.
Ugh.
Life as a House seems great, but I mean, if you're working beside Kevin Kline,
that's
I can imagine that like a pile of shit would be great.
Well, yeah, so you have to do this like, you know, retroactive, reflexive thing of like...
Kevin Kline's amazing, this just rolls off of
yeah,
so many directions,
actually
you can't help but pick it up.
Just enjoying Kevin Kline. Would this be fine if it was like a mirror and he was just reciting his lines to that?
You're seeing it all through a Kleinian lens.
Kleinian lens.
What was the movie where he was the... gay teacher. How do I forget
that? That was...
This is one of my favorite films. How have I forgotten this? I'm so upset.
And like, he gets outed because his student wins an award?
In-N-Out?
Yeah.
In-N-Out, yes.
In-N-Out.
Who... Oh, what is her name? She's so big. Joan Cusack is amazing in that.
Joan Cusack is fantastic in everything she has ever done.
It's true.
She always plays...
Yeah, it's
she
true.
Plays Joan Cusack,
oh
who
my
is
God.
Your best friend.
Oh, my God. So good. Kevin Klein is... I feel like... I feel like he never plays Kevin Kline, and is also always amazing.
Yes. Well, I'd say he played Kevin Kline in Wild Wild West.
I don't think I saw Wild Wild West.
So he's playing a U.S. Marshal, but it's a U.S. Marshal who uses, like, gadgets and costumes, and it's because he's playing characters as his character.
Okay.
His base character for this guy is more or less just Kevin Kline dressed like it's the 1870s.
Okay.
With
all right.
Will Smith. And a theme song.
Oh, yes.
By Sisqó.
Oh, dear. I remember now all the reasons I didn't see it.
Oh, it's fantastic. Actually, no, there's an even better reason to see that film. And I know, it's a terrible film.
Mm-hmm.
The director, writer of it is a terrible person who almost made Superman fight a giant robot spider. The same giant robot spider that appears in Wild Wild West, by the way.
I just can't with, like, any modern superhero movie.
No! There's a fight to be had, because I love the
Let's
MCU.
Do it. Alright, no, I mean, that's a big say. Oh, no, I take it all back. The Avengers, the first one?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's
fantastic.
Really,
I had so much fun. But I got
designed.
Joss Whedon into going to see it.
Oh, okay.
Like, I would
yeah.
not have been, like...
You can't...
If it's not Batman, I don't have time for tights, basically. And I know, and I...
No, I wasn't even going there.
I know, but...
I was going to say, you need to have space for Taika Waititi and the Russo brothers. They're amazing.
I'm also going to take back anything negative said about superheroes, only because people might think it applies to Guardians of the Galaxy, and it does not.
Oh, yeah, and of course, yeah, Gunn. Because, I mean... Well, there's the thing. Disney has realized, okay, we've made X amount of $1 billion with this... We can go a little stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so they now are in the hands of the guys who wrote and directed 21 and 22 Jump Street.
Mm.
Gunn, who, as we noted last week, is involved in a video game about a cheerleader who fights zombies.
This show didn't exist last week. What a great opportunity to plug our other show.
Oh, yeah! Anyway...
Like, we're not even going to name it now. I was like, fuck you, you'll find it.
You'll find... The Industry is Doom is a separate episode and show from Would You Please Shut Up? Or Please Would You Shut Up? Or whatever the hell I name this thing.
Man, we just said theme music, theme music, theme music a bunch at the start of this.
Yes,
that,
we did.
That should absolutely be our...
Actually, the very first episode...
That should be our theme music.
Which has been removed from iTunes because it's me just... literally talking for half an hour making shit up as I go.
I thought it was explicit content, that's why I took it down. But... Which is impressive for a podcast.
Right.
It's like,
right.
If it's so explicit that your ears can't handle it, that's really saying something.
There's a little box I check that says explicit, and it means that they don't touch it.
Okay.
And, but I've actually been curious about that. Please do email in if, dear listener, if you have an opinion on this. I don't know whether to check this explicit or not, because as while we swear like the Dickens, da-da-da.
Any
don't...
podcast where anyone says like the Dickens
like
cannot
the Dickens.
Possibly be explicit content.
Oh, God, that's what we need to do. We need to do an explicit content podcast that is just about Dickensian stuff called Like the Dickens.
Oh. Featuring a guest host that's definitely not me.
This book is trite, and I hate it, and I hate everyone in it.
No, that was the movie. I love the book.
That's
to get us back to the Watchmen.
Yes. Oh, yes, right. So,
just for talking about, because the format of the graphic novel,
yeah.
Where the chapters kind of begin with almost like a little mini scrapbook of information, like newspaper articles, old like magazine clippings, like just... A lot of random backstory stuff that really fleshes out the characters so well, and it's just, you know, just plopped in exactly where you need, just to break up the story. It's really well done. I love the structure of it.
That right there is why I love Alan Moore. Like, you've got a copy of Watchmen. I have a copy of everything he has ever done. I'm not
Show
joking.
Up.
Everything. I have a full set of the magazine he released 10 years ago. I have a copy of his novel, one of only three in the province.
How do you know how many copies of his novel are in the province?
Because these things are so fucking rare that they can be tracked. I have a copy of The Slow Chocolate Autopsy. There are two in Canada. I own one. They were only printed once in England because Alan Moore paid for it.
I'd just like to put it out there. If people send me $20, I will send them back your address.
Send me books! Send me books!
I'm sure.
I should note, that's not actually written by Alan Moore. That's written by Ian Sinclair, who works constantly with Alan Moore as essentially like artistic partner.
What did you think of V for Vendetta, the movie and the book?
I of course, adore them both for different reasons. The book is a brilliant political statement and way of looking at how politics crumbles and how events actually occur. The movie is I just almost spilled my wine.
You're drinking?
Oh god, no. Is a terrific LGBT film. And
that's what I was...
Period, circle, underline. I once got into a big old fight back at a university with my roommate's girlfriend. Because I kept insisting, no, this movie is about, and this is before I was out, this movie is about trans people. This movie is about being transgender. And she freaked out and screamed at me and said, no, it's about people being superhero and blowing stuff up. It's like, no, it's about someone whose identity at first doesn't matter, choosing to become who they feel they are, and asserting it so hard that it destroys the state. Fuck you.
That's why you post so many pretty pictures of yourself.
Yeah.
Trying to destroy the state through glamour.
Tear it down and make it look fabulous.
That's gotta be a tagline for something. Oh, that's our new political party, which we'll launch after episode 8.
Tear it down and make it look fabulous.
That's it. Exactly.
I love it already.
Hmm. That's a good show. I like starting off with the pop culture discussion before we get into meaty issues.
That's the thing. It kind of like really flows well.
Pepperoni at the lunch. It does flow well. Well, we're both really kind of pop culture dorks in different ways. Like,
yeah,
I like that we are in different ways a lot as well. Like, we do have overlapping interests, but yeah, I'm gonna dork out hard over some Star Trek at some point.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And not like any
point.
New movies or anything. Like, nope. And
no.
I know you'll join me on
yes.
like the Discovery, but like.
But we're gonna go.
We're gonna go into Deep Space Nine, and we're gonna go into some obnoxious detail.
Yeah, I'm going to at some point lay out my plan to save the Star Trek Next Generation films by brutally torturing Jean-Luc Picard until he's broken.
How many lights will we see when you're done?
Oh, God.
He won't see any lights when I'm finished.
He's going to be speaking Cardassian by then.
That's great. Speaking of Cardassian...
Oh, no!
The book that Andrew J. Robinson wrote? I think that's his name. Andrew Robinson, I think. Yeah, played Garak, the
yes,
sailor.
Yes,
yes. Fantastically.
Yeah.
And read that character as, I believe, bisexual in his head in early...
Yeah, if not, like, pretty clearly gay.
I would buy some bisexuality for that, because I would buy some bisexuality.
One bisexuality,
would that I could.
Please.
he does play it, like, there's a definite kind of... almost like a genteel air to him, which is like Emperor Cardassian, who are these like, you know, horrifying fascists essentially.
Like outright fascist. That was like their starting point of like, let's have a species that is fascist.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, let's explain what the Holocaust would look like on an alien world and then make these guys the baddies. And then this guy is the kind of delicate, genteel tailor and spy version of
yeah.
What a great character.
So
but
good.
Just portrayed so well by him, by Andrew Robinson, and he wrote a book explaining the backstory of his character and furthering the story a little bit past what happened at the end of Deep Space Nine with it. And it's great. It's just great. It's so much fun. It doesn't jar at all. Like, you know, sometimes you'll read something like that and it's just like, why did you Well, sometimes I read something like that, it's like, Hollywood shouldn't write. And then other times I read something like that, it's just like, this is great, but it doesn't jar with, or it does jar with the character. Like, it doesn't...
And sometimes you read it, and it's always,
it's not
this
as familiar.
Is the Shatner verse. Oh, God.
Exactly. It's like, oh, so that's how you saw what you were portraying on screen all those years. We never read it that way.
No one else on Earth but you, William.
Nope. You read this, and it's like, oh, you saw Garrick in your head exactly the way we did every episode. Thank you for filling us in on some extra information and providing us with some, like, solid entertainment.
Yeah, well, Garrick was so good. I
A Stitch in Time. That's the name of it.
That's a great name for it.
Well, yeah.
But, like, the episodes where it's just him and Julian...
It's Taylor. It's almost a little too long, I know,
but the episodes where it's just him and Julian were so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like playing spies and being spies while Julian's playing one. And it's like, oh,
Julian
Bashir
was such a goddamn irritating character. And
yes.
Yet, so many of the best moments in the show revolved around him and Garrick or him and O'Brien.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Colm Meaney's, you know, like, such an amazing performer. Was it Colm Meaney? Yeah, Colm Meaney. Colm. You have to say
that's
that
a hard name.
Fucking wasted.
That's a rough name.
Yeah.
Colm Meaney, no less.
Right. Apparently, whenever he got a script, like for the first four seasons of DS9, every episode that he was on was called Hurting Miles O'Brien or something like that.
Oh, they loved,
it was,
loved to inflict pain and suffering on Miles O'Brien like nobody else.
It was the greatest acting experience he ever had because all he had to do was just suffer.
Just be devastated. Yeah, they punish O'Brien with suffering the way they punish Harry Kim on Voyager with humiliation and irrelevance.
Mm-hmm. And the way they punish Worf with like slaps to the face and having to throw himself halfway across
and
the bridge.
And an excuse to go while facing the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, and far too many references to Klingon opera.
Mm-hmm.
Far too many.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be in my hometown growing up a group called CAG. They were the Klingon action group. And they were just like the only cosplayers I had ever seen. And at first glance, it was just like the dorkiest thing you could ever experience in your life.
God, yes.
And then at second glance, and just like most people's first exposure to cosplay, they were clearly having a fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing all of it for charity. It was hysterical. I was like, alright, the Klingons personally have never done it for me in the way that I would actually want to emulate them.
Yeah.
But, like, you guys are seriously enjoying yourselves and benefiting somebody. Like, hold on.
That's the thing. The people who are into Klingons are really into it. They'll spend enormous amounts of money dressing like them.
I've never understood it. They're like boring pirates that talk about honor all the time and clearly don't have any idea what it means.
Right?
Like,
they're.
I've just offended a lot of Klingon fans.
They're boring pirates. They're boring Vikings. They're boring warrior Mongols. They're
mm-hmm.
they're everything that is boring. And yet, yeah, like you can learn their entire language.
Yeah.
You can do it on Duolingo. Who should be giving
us
money? Yeah.
They should at least give me my subscription for free, fuckers. Hi, you've just finished 30 seconds of learning something. Do you want to subscribe? Let me see. You've asked me every 30 seconds for the last few months. No.
Christ. There are... there's Shakespeare that has been released in it.
But yes,
there's this great... pop culture reviewer...
Us?
Yeah, us? You mean us?
Fantastic.
I can't believe I've completely forgotten his name. This is why I can't do this show alone, because it's mostly me sitting there going, what the hell was that guy's name? What was his name? Anyway, Kyle Calgren. He, once a year, he does this couple of segments on Shakespeare films. Basically, like, finds the weirdest version of any Shakespeare you can have and then talks about it.
Okay.
And this one time, he did, like, a breakdown of what it means to take Hamlet and to translate it into an incomplete language like Klingon. Because there aren't full... Klingon doesn't have a full vocabulary.
You know the line that inspired
needed.
That, right?
Was it? You haven't heard...
you haven't heard Shakespeare until you've heard him in the original Klingon.
The original Klingon. And, like,
so good.
It just starts... It started as, like, that one line, which was a throwaway by a Shakespearean actor to another Shakespearean actor.
Summing up the entire appeal of the actually well-portrayed Klingon characters.
Right.
Like, that's the kind of cocky cultural superiority, but that is self-aware and wry.
Oh, I
that at its best works so well in Klingons. And then the rest of the time, they're just clanking around, yelling about bloodline, eating worms, and just, like, being generally irritating.
Yeah, if a gun was held to my head and said, you're allowed to have one thing of Trek, Undiscovered Country is absolutely my choice. The characters are the best in it. The plot line is...
Which one is Undiscovered Country?
That's the one that's from.
Oh.
That line's from. So, like...
Every time I've seen all of the original Star Trek movies...
Yeah.
It's been the Trek Mistay movie marathon.
Oh, so by the time you reach number six,
I've been
like, oh, soused.
Like, no. Like,
oh, and you have to get through Final Frontier to get to it.
Lord knows it's all haze, but like, yeah.
What does God need with a starship?
Take a drink every time William Shatner grandstands. Like, you're just done. Like 20 minutes in,
you're dead by the time he hits God.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of come around for like, you know. Don't even know what the last one was that wasn't, you know, a hybrid with Jean-Luc Picard.
Okay, so Undiscovered Country is technically the last original within Generations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that explains why I definitely don't remember Undiscovered Country. No, that's, I'm just getting...
It's supposed to be their true goodbye for the original cast, and they all pose at the very, like, the last shot is them all posed together. You know, triumphant, successful, the Klingons are finally going to be peaceful with the Federation, and they're, instead of, like, title cards coming down with their names, they sign each title card, and then it flies off into space, and the next one comes up, and it's this moment of, like, oh, God,
I loved
you all. Yeah.
And then William Shatner's wanted that.
Yeah, and then Shatner's like, oh, wait, man, I still want to be Kirk, and everyone's like, but we don't want you to be. Where was it?
I bet they actually probably begged him to be in that because they're like, we just don't know that the TNG cast can, like,
that's
film
exactly
an actual
what happened.
Movie. Okay, see?
Yeah.
That network executives are... There's no one worse than a network executive.
Mm-hmm.
Network executives, you canceled Firefly. You're the dumbest people alive. Just so many mistakes. And that movie... I won't say the whole movie was one of them, but...
There's so much... Generations sets off the problems that necessitate having to break Jean-Luc Picard. And, you know, it's like... They weren't... In every single TNG film they made, there's a hint of something that could be amazing. Like, truly amazing.
Okay, alright, let's do this.
Okay, yeah, why
Generations?
Not? So, Generations only needs one small fix. It needs two small fixes. So, the first one is obviously Kirk can't die that way. He can't have a bridge fall on him. That is stupid.
Meh.
What should happen is he's given a, like, an ambiguous ending. He should go back into the goddamn Nexus.
That would be nice.
You know, so what happened to Kirk? No one knows.
No one knows.
He
yeah.
went back into the Nexus.
Yeah, you know what? No, I take that back. You're right. It shouldn't... No one should know what happened to Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
yeah.
he's too... You know, say what we want, which is a lot about William Shatner. Like, no, he's too grand of a character. Like,
exactly. To have him end...
It's mundane.
Is too mundane. It's one thing for Spock to die, because he's at least slightly off from the center of that
mm-hmm.
Amazingness. You know,
sorry, he's not the captain.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone's allowed to die if they're not the captain.
So, first, that should happen. Second, Picard should be smarter about using the Nexus, because instead of just being like, oh, just drop me off right before we're about to lose. That seems a little stupid.
Mm.
But
well, if you want to go there, we can rip apart
well,
all of Star
yes,
Trek.
Exactly. But specifically, though...
Looking at you, Voyager.
Looking hard at you, Voyager.
Looking at all the characters you killed in that last season and then went, but let's go back to that Wednesday.
Yeah, it never happened.
I digress, but that is a terrible goddamn show.
Yes, it is. And we will get to that eventually. But, all right, so the main thing that you to change is you need to focus on the fact that his entire family just died. His entire family just died. And
René, Robert,
René,
what's her name?
Robert.
Probably started with R.
And
they'll call her Renette.
And the Polaroid photos with the silver flashy things around the edges so that you know it's in the future.
I love how different science fiction makes you know that it's in the future.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica. Why would any books, doorways, or anything have corners? Of course they're all chopped off.
No, we don't have corners. We're just, we're not gonna, or like,
when they, we're going, we don't need corners.
Or when they used to have the pads in Star Trek TNG, but instead of simply having one that you would change the program on, they would have a pile of these
pads.
Things.
Pile
of
pads?
Yeah.
I love it. It's like,
just
as soon as the iPad came out, I was like, we're there. We're in TNG. This
yeah,
is great.
Give me five so
hey,
I can carry them
look
around.
Look at this. I definitely don't need to be carrying 10 of these, and it's definitely not the future, so why? Oh, man. But then again, if we want to go why, every design aesthetic choice in the original series.
Which is why I hate when people were complaining about the look of Discovery, where it's like, no, Star Trek has to be the future of the moment it is released.
My God, when people go on about Klingons, like, but why do they look different at different times? Because there weren't really good makeup experts that you could afford on the budget that 60s Star Trek had onto. Oh my God,
right?
Really?
Because you can't.
Let's talk
do
more.
That.
No, anyone picking apart Discovery can fuck right off, and I realize you keep banging the gay moments in television and movies drum, but that's what I'm gonna do because there just weren't any to bang about when I was growing up. Seriously, great portrayals of gay characters on Star Trek, which is so fucking overdue, and anyone who gives me any Trill-related nonsense can just, well, I was gonna say eat a dick, but it's all about lesbians on that show, so they can just eat some Trill spots, I guess, I don't know, like, fuck, no, we needed some legit representation. It's the future. We could all feel it coming back in the 90s. Like, we knew things were, you know, socially liberaling up, thankfully, and, like,
well, do you remember
we could start seeing ourselves on the local news, but we couldn't see ourselves in the future?
Yeah.
Like, what is that?
Do you remember Lieutenant Hawk?
Yes. Yes.
And
so dreamy.
Who's actor? I can't
great
think.
He, first gay character.
He's the currently a villain on DC's Legends of Tomorrow. He is a fantastic actor. And he is cheesy and hammy and great.
He was in Minority Report.
He was. I can never remember his name. He's also Dum Dum Dugan in Captain America.
Oh, you know what the rule for this show for any actor that we really appreciate their work?
Yeah.
But we cannot for the life of us remember their name should be. That character is Margot Martindale.
Congratulations, Margot Martindale. You are fantastic on DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
I loved Margot Martindale as Lieutenant Hawk. And also in Minority Report, actually, yeah.
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 Just like, not a nuanced performance in that, but Margot Martindale, very enthusiastic.
Always does these great side character performances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He,
always.
Mr. Margot Martindale.
Mr. Margot. No, I feel like it should absolutely adapt that way. So thank you, Margot. You're graying in the coolest way that a old man can. Because you still have that really tight hair from, like, the late 90s.
I'm sorry, it's beloved character actress, Margot Martindale. Such a fan. We should probably end it there.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
We should always end it on beloved character actress,
Margot Martindale. Thank you for listening to Would You Please Shut Up, or Please Would You Shut Up, or Shut Up Would You Please, whichever I ended up naming this. We can be contacted over Twitter at Would You Shut Up? Or Shut Up, Please. We'll figure that out at a later time.
We still won't edit this, though, because we're just not into that.
God, no. I don't want to edit. That's, like, I already put so much effort into making this look pretty to start with.
One of my favorite internet shows is, I guess we're not going to edit it right away.
God, no.
We'll never end it if the moment strikes. Don't you worry, listening audience of dozens. We'll never end it if something comes to mind.
We should just do a live stream and
just
be done with it.
It would just go on for days. And followed by its sequel, The Trixie and Katya Show. Have you seen either of these?
No, I've heard of, but never seen.
Such
no, wait, yes,
heavy
you showed
and
it
magical
to me last,
editing.
Yes, oh my God, you showed it to me last week.
Yes.
Oh, shit, that was, yeah, like, the most heavy-handed just,
it's so funny, I
here.
Love it. The editing is almost as much a star, if not as much, as Trixie and Katya and sometimes Bob. Like, it's just, it's great. And I love the idea of being so impressed by that show that on the show that I'm on, fuck editing forever.
Fuck editing forever. Yeah.
Unless we ever, you know, manage to secure even a phone call or reading a slight cease and desist letter from beloved character actress, Margot Martindale. I'd edit that. I would. Just to make it sound kind and not like we should stop talking about her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we'll never stop talking on whatever show this is about not shutting up.
This show in which we will not shut up.
Title pending.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.